As I start this morning, I want you to use your imagination and travel back in time to the early church. And imagine yourself going back to one of the cities like Philippi or Ephesus, and you're gathered together in a church. And there, the people around you are all kinds of different people. Maybe over here, there's a former slave. On this side, a person who was once a jailer. There's several women here who are rich merchants. There's some wealthy Romans, some former soldiers, some Jewish people. And they all come together. And as they gather together for worship, all around them, they live in a culture that follows different patterns, different ways of thinking than they do. They live in a culture of the empire that promotes militarism, an empire that promotes lots of different gods, an empire that promotes many different paths. They live in an empire that has different morals than they do, different ways of seeing the world, different ways they think that men and women should treat each other, different ways they think that men should treat their wives or men should treat their children, different ideas about sexuality. And then they come together and they've got all these forces around on the outside. And then there's just all the differences. How does a slave get along with a jailer? How does a rich Roman get along with a merchant? How does someone who is a Jew get along with a Gentile? And so here they are, they gather for worship, and they've got these things on the outside that seem to be pressing in, and then they gather, and then within, there's all these things going on, and all these differences, all these different kinds of people who are trying to be together and stay together. Well, if you use your imagination, maybe that's not so hard, because maybe you realize it's not so different today, that many of the same things are true, that we gather together, and as we look down the pews, as we sit with our neighbors, even with our family, we realize we all come from different backgrounds and different places. Some of us grew up in church. Some of us didn't come to church till we were much later. And then even if we grew up in church, there's a chance we went to different kinds of churches. Maybe we went to a Catholic church. Maybe we were at a Methodist church. Maybe we were at a church where it was very small. Maybe we were at a huge church. We have different ways of understanding the world. We look around and we realize that we have different political beliefs, different understandings of things, that if we were all to sit together and when we gather around the Bible, we all open the Bible up, and sometimes we don't all see things the same way. We have lots of these differences. And then we look around in the world and we realize that as we gather here and as we proclaim Jesus is Lord, as we proclaim the nature of who Jesus is and this one path to salvation, as we proclaim an ethic, a way of living that looks like Jesus, we realize what we talk about and what we want to strive for is different than the world around us. That's not the same message that we hear. It's not the same message we hear when we go to school. It's not the same message we hear at our workplace. A message that says, get ahead, do your best, look out for number one. And so we struggle. And so how do we maintain ourselves in the midst of that? Because the early church struggled in this way. And part of the problem was in this early church was they had these forces on the inside and the forces on the outside, and it threatened to tear them apart. And into that came a man named Paul. Paul was one of the early followers of Jesus. And he wrote letters to these churches. He couldn't get around. There were no emails. There were no telephones. There was no way to Skype into the church. But what he could do was he could send letters, messages to these churches and say, I have some words for you, some words of encouragement, some words of advice, some ways to live out. And one of the things that Paul talked a lot about was the idea of unity, of how does a church stay together? And you heard that in both the passages we read, one in the letter to the Ephesians, one in the letter to the Philippians. How do you stay together in the midst of that? And so we have two very different places. The city of Philippi was one such place where the former Roman colony, so there were a lot of soldiers retired there, but there were slaves, there were jailers, there were rich women in the thing. So it was a mixed group of people. And they were all together and they were being torn apart. And the same in the letter to the Ephesians, probably maybe to the church in Ephesus, but also probably to other churches around there. And this idea of unity comes up again and again. And so I want us to think on that. And a few years back, as a congregation, we developed something called our Covenant for Christian Community, a way that we talked about we want to treat one another, the way we want to be together. what it looks like to live a life of remarkable love. And if you walk out in the foyer, you'll see posters on the wall, big versions of this. And I'm going to read the last two sentences, or the preamble and then the last one. It says, as a body of people brought together by the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, we are called to live as a compelling community of servants. By God's grace and truth, empowered by the Holy Spirit, we commit to a life of remarkable love. And the last thing, putting the needs of others ahead of our wants, willingly sacrificing in service, and then striving for unity, persevering through disagreement. And that's what I want us to think on today, is this word unity. What does it mean to strive for unity in the church? That's what I want us to think about. What do we mean by unity? Why does unity matter? And then how do we achieve unity? So what is it? Why does it matter? And how do we get there? And so first, what is unity? And as I was thinking about unity, I was thinking back to my days of, I know it was probably middle school days, and when everybody listened to the same radio, there was like one radio station. Some of you who are older remember that. I mean, there was one, it was like a pop station, and then there was the old people station. And that was, you know, like if you were under 40, you listened to one station. Everybody old over 40 listened to another radio station. Or that's how it was where I grew up. So everybody knew the same songs. And one of the songs that was very popular when I was that age was by a group called Pink Floyd. Anybody ever heard of Pink Floyd? Yeah, yeah. And then there are those of you who don't want to admit knowing Pink Floyd. So they're Pink Floyd. And the popular song when I was called A Brick in the Wall, Another Brick in the Wall. And so it's this, you know, we don't need no education, but it's like, all in all, we're just another brick in the wall. And this picture of being a part of this faceless, nameless, soulless organization where we're simply just another brick in the wall. And sometimes when we think about unity, that's the picture we have, is that unity means we just all become the same. We all become clones. We all become exactly the same. And unity means we agree on every single thing. Unity means there's absolutely consensus. But when we look in the Bible, that's not what unity means. The Bible doesn't ever sit down and say, this is what unity is. But as it describes unity, it describes something very different. So when Paul writes to some of the churches, he talks about unity. But one of the things he never says is we all have to be the same. In fact, in another place in the Bible, Paul talks about us being a body. And he talks about unity and diversity. He says, we're unified, we're one body, but we're different parts. One part's a hand, one part's an eye, one part's an ear, one part's a foot. And we all need each other. So when we talk about unity, we're not talking about everybody being the same. When we talk about a church being and living out unity, what I'm not saying is that we all have to agree on everything. Because if we wanted a church where everybody agreed on everything, any guesses how big that church would be? One person, right? We'd all have our own little individual church. It would almost be as if, you know, we all came in and we just all put on our earbuds and we all listened to our own music. We all listened to our own, so we all did our own thing and we just kind of sat. But that's not what unity looks like. Unity isn't just all of us believing the same thing. It's not all of us agreeing on everything. And so I think one of the better pictures of unity is a description somebody once offered me, and they described in terms of a bounded set and a centered set. And so that's the fancy words. And so in a bounded set, there's kind of you draw a boundary around something. And to be united, you're inside the circle. And like you never cross outside the circle because then you're outside. That's one way of thinking of unity, is we got to keep everybody in the circle. And don't go outside the circle because then you're not part of us. And some places draw the circle really big, and some places like to draw the circle really, really little. But one person described our denomination and our church, the Evangelical Covenant Church, as what's called a centered set. In other words, we don't draw a boundary, but what we say at the center is Jesus. At the center is this living relationship with Jesus. And the centered set focuses on what keeps us together. And what keeps us together is Jesus. And we don't draw a line and say, oh, well, you're outside now, so you're not part of unity. And so while we can't define unity as something real specific, what we can say is what unity is not. Unity is not absolute conformity. Unity is not absolute sameness. Unity is not being all those things. But unity is focusing on what keeps us together. And so we say then, what is unity? And then we say why it matters. And here's where Paul gets, he says, why it matters. He says, there is one body and one spirit, just as you were called to one hope when you were called, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father all. What word do you hear again and again? One. What he's saying is, this is the nature of, this is what God has done. There is one. There aren't many gods we worship. There isn't many faiths. There's one faith. There's one hope. There's one body. There's one spirit. And so all these things he's saying, there's one of these, and so that's why it matters. But I want to focus on the last one most of all. So that's what unity is, why it matters, but how we achieve it. And that's a trick question. And that's a trick question. Because I want you to listen again to this, what it says. Chapter 4, verse 3 of Ephesians. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit. All right. So if we're to keep the unity of the Spirit, what does that suggest about the nature of the unity? Is it something we do? Or is it something God has already done? So it's something that God has already achieved in Jesus. Jesus, through his death, has already united us. Our job, then, is to keep that unity. Our job isn't to make the unity. And Paul says the same thing over in Ephesians. Just a couple of pages, he says, therefore, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, and really a different way we could say that is, since you have encouragement from being united with Christ, any comfort is of, since sharing in the Spirit, any tenderness, do nothing out of selfish ambition. And so he's talking about this unity already exists. You see, when Jesus offered himself up, when we receive that life-giving Spirit that God gives to us, and we're united, we become a part of his body. We are united by God. And so our job then, our part in that, isn't to make ourselves united. It's not to look around and say, oh, come on, we need to all get together. It's to say we're already together. But how do we keep together? How do we maintain that unity of the Spirit that Paul talks about there? He says, how do we make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit? And he gives us all that right there. Earlier on, just the verse before, be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Or over in the letter to the Philippians, he says, then make my joy complete. This is Philippians 2:2. Then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one, there's that word again, one in spirit and of one mind. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourself. And so you hear those words of be humble, gentle, patient, bearing with one another in love. Nothing out of selfish ambition, but considering others better than yourself. So those are at the key, at the center, at the heart of what it looks like to maintain you, is to do those things, to do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, rather in humility, value others above yourself. So in other words, God has brought us together, God has made us united, and the way to maintain that unity is not to look at ourselves, but to look at others and their needs, to look around and to look around to the other people and say, what is it that they need? And so that's that phrase there, putting the needs of others ahead of our wants. And if you have children, sometimes you talk about the difference between those two. Have you ever done that with your children? Like, it's like, oh, I need that. And then we always say, well, you don't need that. You want that. And there's a difference between those two. And there's a difference between what we need and what we want. And so when Paul is talking here to the church and saying, how do we maintain the unity? It's by looking around and asking ourselves, what do others need, not what do I want? And it's hard to admit, but sometimes we go places and we focus on, what do I want? What do I want today? What do I need today? I mean, it's understandable. That's how life works. We go to a restaurant and we don't open up the menu and say, what does somebody else need? I mean, you look at a menu and what do you ask? What do I want today? You go to the movie theater and it's about what you want to watch. You go to the grocery store and it's about what you want. And in church then, that bleeds over. We come in and we say, well, this is what I want. And that want takes many different forms. We might come in and say, well, this is what I want today in terms of the music. This is what I want today in terms of the sermon. This is what I want today in terms of how the sanctuary is laid out. This is what I want today in terms of the temperature in the sanctuary. this is what I want today at the potluck. Because somebody better leave me a boiled egg, because or a deviled egg, or whatever it is that you really want. You can have mine, okay? Really. But there are those things we want. But sometimes it's more than that. We want our pastor to behave in a certain way. We want the people around us to behave in a certain way. We want to be treated in a certain way. We want to come in and we want everybody to say hi to us and to shake our hand. We want to come in and we don't want anybody to shake our hand and say hi to us. Because there are differences, aren't there? There are different ways of people. So we come in with all these wants. And so what happens in a church then if you come in with a lot of wants and desires, a lot of thoughts about how things should be? What are the chances that some of those might not be met? Pretty high, right? Close to 100%. That at some point you're going to come in and something's not going to be the way you want. And then you say, well, you know, this church, this isn't what I want. And so then you begin to make demands. Well, we need to change it so I can get what I want. The problem happens then is, okay, if I shape and mold the church to exactly the way that Anna wants it, what are the chances that everybody else is going to want the same church? Not going to work for them. And then we say, well, no, wait, no. Today, now it's Rhonda's day. We're going to make church just, you know, in the image of Rhonda. And she's, yes! And everybody says, oh, I don't know about that. And then we say, okay, now, Rhonda, your day's over. Now it's Micah's turn. So we go and say, no, this is not how it works. Would that bring unity to a church? If we just said, okay, we assigned everybody a day and said, okay, today's your day. Make church your way. Have it your way, right? Is that Burger King, right? Yeah. So, yeah, have it your way. Yeah, I know. So, but I mean, that's, you know, like where I'm king for a day. But what Paul is talking about is something different. What Paul is talking about is where I come in and I look down the pew, I look to the people ahead of me, I look to the people behind me and say, what do they need? What is it that they need? And how can I begin to serve them? Because that's the model here of Jesus. It says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. In your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus. In other words, the way to achieve that is, and then it says, what is Jesus' mindset? It says, who, being in very nature God, in other words, who had every right to demand things be his way, who had every right to say, I am God, I made all of you, I made everything, so it's going to be my way, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. In other words, didn't come in and say, I made everything, so it's going to be my way. I give the most money to the church. I've been here the longest, so it's going to be my way. But he made himself nothing by taking the nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. In other words, Jesus didn't come in and say, I want it my way. I'm going to do it my way. But instead looked and said, what do others need? And he made the ultimate need. He looked and he said, what people need is a servant. And so unity comes as we look to the needs of others. As we look around and see, what do the others need? What do the people next to me need? What do the people in front of me? What do the other people who are a part of this church need? And that's how unity is achieved. Or more properly, that's how unity is maintained. That this unity that God has created is maintained as we're not looking out for ourselves, but we're looking to the needs of others. And then our temptation is, well, what about my needs? And the call to Jesus is, say, stop worrying about your needs. Stop worrying about your needs. And that's not easy, is it? And so when Jesus says, take up your cross, I mean, he was talking literally about dying, but in some sense it's saying, take up that willingness to die to yourself, to your wants, to your desires. It's not easy. I have a certain way I want to do things. I have a way that things should happen. I ideas about the way things should go in all so many ways, so many different parts of life. And when they don't go my way, I get a little upset. Sometimes that happens maybe for you too, huh? When things don't go your way, when you've got a picture of the way things should go and they don't go. But what God is calling us to is something higher. What Paul is writing about, inspired by God's Holy Spirit here, is something higher. He's saying, there is something different, that God has done this thing at a cosmic level, where he has brought together Jews and Gentiles, slave and free, men and women, barbarians, Scythian, all these different people, all Republicans, Democrats, men, women, old and young, executives down to the janitors, all at these different levels, have brought them together and said, you are now one. And the way to maintain that unity, the way to keep that together, is to not be looking out for number one, but to be looking out for everyone else. And the only way to do that is through the work of God in our heart. To invite God in. This following Jesus is not an easy thing. And so if we are to maintain the unity of the Spirit, because it's by this unity, why did Paul emphasize this here, particularly Church Philippi? Because we go back to that beginning. Because there were forces on the inside threatening to tear them apart. Forces on the outside. But when they maintain this unity, we'll read down a little farther in chapter 2. Therefore, and again, this may strike a chord in this one, do everything without grumbling or arguing. This is verse 14. See the same sort of thing about being united? Do everything without grumbling or arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a warped and crooked generation. And then he says this, then you will shine among them like stars in the sky, as you hold firmly to the word of life. And then I will be able to boast on the day of Christ that I did not run or labor in vain. Then you will be able to shine like stars in the sky. Because as we look to the needs of others ahead of our own, as we let the love of Jesus flow through us and into others, then what happens is we shine like stars in the sky. And we point the way to Jesus. So may we maintain this unity. May we keep ourselves together through this love as we set aside our own wants, as we set aside our own desires, as we set aside all those other things, and look to the needs of others. So as you go through this week, as you think about the people around you, look and say, what is it that the other people need, not what is it that I want? Let the love of Jesus flow through you so that we can shine like stars. Amen.